The transition to winter and much shorter days can be an adjustment for many of us, but for some people, seasonal affective disorder makes it even more of a challenge. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. My guest today, Dr. Michael Peterson, is an assistant professor and director of hospital psychiatric services at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health with us to talk about seasonal affective disorder, or SAD for short. Dr. Michael Peterson, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Boy, SAD, that's a great acronym, isn't it? SAD?
It is. It really fits, and it, I think, sometimes captures what goes on for a lot of people starting this time of year.
What is? Talk a little bit about the symptoms and what happens to people with it.
Sure. So the symptoms are pretty much identical to what would be a part of a serious depression or a major depressive disorder. So people will feel like their mood is just low. They'll often report that they can't enjoy things or get excited about things like they usually would. And it can have a lot of other physical symptoms, too, of fatigue, low energy, difficulty with sleep, either insomnia or hypersomnia, feeling they need to sleep too much. All of those things can go on, and it, more severe cases can go to the point of not wanting to be alive or even thoughts of ending their own lives.
Yeah, and I think for some, too, isn't it not true that they want to eat more?
You're right. So appetite changes are a part of depression, and particularly with seasonal affective disorder, that feeling of low energy, feeling of more appetite, and often people report craving certain kinds of foods, like carbohydrate-rich foods, sugary foods, things like that.
Yeah. And is it looking at the causes of it, is it just a lack of sunlight or lack of light? What?
Well, a lack of light probably has a big part of it, that the shortening length of days, the less light in the mornings and the evenings probably has a big part of it. What we know, though, is that light has an effect on the brain and brain systems, and our circadian clocks, or our internal clock, which sets our day-night cycles, can be affected by the shorter days, and that probably connects to other parts of the brain that really regulate mood and depression.
Yeah. And here we are coming up Saturday night, where we, you know, the spring ahead, fall back.
Mm-hmm.
So we lose an hour, and I have got to tell you, an hour of daylight on the afternoon end, I've got to tell you, that really hasn't, it takes me several days to get readjusted to that one silly little hour.
Yeah, an hour is actually a significant amount of time when you're talking about how much sleep you're getting or when you're talking about the amount of daylight. So a lot of people, we've probably been noticing the shortening days already, that I certainly noticed it's a lot different getting up in the morning when it's dark now. And having a big chunk of time change like that, an hour all of a sudden in the weekend, can really kind of push that even more so.
I think for me, it might be a little better this year because maybe 8 months ago, I started a routine where I'm out at 5:30 in the morning to do a 5K.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the extra light will help me on that end.
I think you bring up a good point. I think one of the things that people can do to try to prevent this, as well as if they're noticing it, things they can do to try to improve it. You mentioned, too, so adjusting your schedule so you can try to get at least a little bit more direct sunlight, a little more bright light. And the other thing you mentioned is having regular physical activity. And that's actually something we probably underuse as a treatment for depression. That really does have an effect on mood and can help keep people get better, even independent of medications, the therapy, some of the things we talk about maybe more often as treatments.
Talking today with Dr. Michael Peterson about seasonal affective disorder, and certainly looking forward to hearing from you. Do you have suffer from seasonal affective disorder? What's worked for you, or are you still looking for the best approach to treat it? How do you help family members? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page, or our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. Go to our Facebook page and you can post your question or your comment there. We have a comment from Jim in Jefferson who wonders, what you think of this. What do you say about atypical seasonal affective disorder? I love winter, but I despise the summer.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to the wind and the coolness tomorrow, but why do I go downhill every spring when the humidity and temperatures go up? I never liked summer, even as a kid.
Sure. So the most common type of a seasonal pattern is going to be the winter fall depression or the winter blues. But there are some people who say, you know, every spring or every summer, things tend to get worse. And I think it's partly to give a vague answer. We're all wired a little bit differently. And some people might find the changes in temperature or longer daylight a bit too much for their system and affects them that way. The clinical definition of seasonal affective disorder means that there's a recurrent pattern of depression at least 2 or 3 years in a row with a consistent association with the seasons. So it certainly can happen the other way, too.
Yeah. Dr. Michael Peterson, our guest. Let's turn to Ann in Ellison Bay next. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks so much. I had a question. I have seasonal affective disorder myself. And I've had it for several years, and I use the light box, and it works very well for me. But as I get older, it's getting less severe. And I was wondering if there was any kind of hormonal influence on it, as presumably as I get older, I make less hormones.
Sure, and that's a good association to be aware of. The safe answer that I usually tell people, particularly women, that as each woman is different as far as how their monthly cycles can affect a depression, and then changes with associated with menopause and that period before and after too. That some women find that their moods are more level as they go through that change. Other women may find that they're actually more prone to depression. So that sounds like a positive thing for you, that you're finding that the degree of the seasonal depression is actually improving for you.
Yes, that's true. The further I get into menopause, unless I never know if it's really in effect or if it's just, something else.
Sure, and a lot of things can play into that, but I think there's enough evidence about how hormonal changes can be a part of it that it's likely at least a component of it.
Yeah. And thanks.
Well, good to know. Good. I'll look forward to more.
Great. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much for calling. Well, Anne obviously is a woman. Are women more likely to suffer from SAD or not?
In general, women are more likely to suffer from depression, and I think that's true for seasonal depression as well. That may be a biological difference, and maybe partly that men are more reluctant to tell people about it or tell doctors about it, so it might be underidentified. I think there's probably a bit of both.
Are there other groups of people who are more likely to suffer from a SAD? For example, I heard that people who live far from the equator are more likely because of the daylight hours being short.
That's right. And that's not so much of a individual or biological reason, but the amount of light we're getting. So in Wisconsin, we're more prone to that than people who, say, live in Georgia or Florida or Texas, just because of our location and the amount of change with our daylight hours.
Interesting. I recall I spent a year in the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, and there at about 6 o'clock, it was like someone switched off the light, and it went from light to dark. And I thought, it felt so strange because it was obviously summertime-like all the year round, and yet we didn't have any light past 6 o'clock. It was strange. Dorothy and Madison, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a question about vitamin D. My general physician has put me on 2,000 international units a day, and I found that my depression, my seasonal affective disorder, is actually better. Mm-hmm. I've been on it for about 3 months or so. And I'm curious to know what your guest knows about that connection of the vitamin D deficiency that I guess can be found in Northern European people.
Right. So I think certain ethnicities are more prone to vitamin D deficiencies. Probably the other connection to seasonal depression, though, is that vitamin D requires sunlight on the body to convert it to its active form. So in the wintertime, and people who don't get much sunlight are more prone to vitamin D deficiencies as well. So that's probably part of the reason it's important to look for that. There have also been some studies just looking at supplements, including vitamin D, as ways to improve depression, and there's been some suggestion that vitamin D supplementation may help reduce depression. And it's a pretty safe thing to do, too, so it's often a good way to start and look if that can help.
Okay, thank you so much for the answer.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. Dr. Michael Peterson, Assistant Professor and Director of Hospital Psychiatric Services and Psychiatry Clerkship Director at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest today as we talk with him about seasonal affective disorder. Call in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Is this something that's worked for you? We'd love to hear about that. If you're still looking for the best approach, give us a call. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post a question or comment there. Randy in Grafton emailed and wondered if grow lights help with SAD.
Well, grow lights, I think the main thing with light therapy, it's a good treatment for seasonal affective disorder because we're replacing some of the sunlight we're missing. The key thing, though, is having a bright enough light and having that close enough to you to get the real effect. So grow lights probably generate enough light if you can sit close enough to them. And just like a light box, you'd want to spend about 20 to 30 minutes real close to those lights, within 1 to 2 feet, and usually try to do that in the morning to really have the most benefit.
And so the light box, describe how that, what it looks like and how it works.
Sure. It sort of looks like kind of a lighting panel that you might see on the ceiling, but usually they're portable. You can either carry them or they're on a stand with wheels. That way you can make sure you're really close to them. And the closeness is just to make sure you have enough brightness of the light to really have that effect. It's going to go through your eyes, which will affect your internal clock in your brain. And so really it's that brightness that's important.
So you just turn it on and sit there for a half hour?
That's right. That's right. And people can read or eat their breakfast or do other things while they're doing that as long as they're staying close to the light.
No. Oh. Kristen in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. So my question is, I'm a new mom, and I do have a tendency to kind of slump into this, you know, winter blues, and I've never been diagnosed with SAD, but just with the change in my hormones since I am a new mom, I'm just wondering what options are available or what things I should look for, and I can take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So that's a good question. For anybody, the important thing, when do I need to get treatment, or is this just kind of a normal seasonal thing? If it's starting to affect your ability to do your day-to-day things that are important to you, getting to work, taking care of your family, if it's getting to the point that you're having any thoughts of suicide or death, those are all very strong indicators you need to really get more treatment and bring this to attention of your doctors or a psychiatrist. As far as treatments, that period of time after a woman gives birth is a more vulnerable time for depression, both because of the hormone changes and also the stress of taking care of an infant and not getting enough sleep. So really watching for those signs that it's getting worse. Particularly women who are breastfeeding, options like light box, exercise, other things that aren't using medication are sometimes a good place to start, too, because of concerns about how medications could potentially affect the baby.
Mm-hmm. And thanks again, Kristen, for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Michael Peterson from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a great time visiting with Dr. Michael Peterson of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health about seasonal affective disorder. Are you affected by it? I hope not. But if you are and have questions about it, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Bob in Madison has a question or comment. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Thanks. And I was calling. You talked a minute ago about the light boxes. And I'm just wondering, I have one from maybe 12 years ago that's plenty large, about the size of a TV. And my wife encourages, you know, now they have some more modern ones that are smaller. They're just little, almost the size of just a table light. And I'm wondering, are those as good? Is there much range or variation of the type of light you get?
Sure. So the lights that are approved for treating seasonal affective disorder, ones you would specifically buy for that, the important thing is going to be the brightness of it. And lighting has improved, so you can have a smaller unit that generates the same brightness and probably with less heat, so that might be worth looking into. And if you're going to continue using the older one, at some point it's probably worth getting it checked to make sure it's still functioning properly and giving you enough light to really have that benefit, too.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate the call. Linda in Madison, your turn. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Regarding the light box, a friend of mine had said that she had read the light into the eyes can be damaging to the eyes over time. So can you speak about that, please?
Sure. So there is some potential, I think, for most people that it's not enough light or in a way that is going to cause damage or cause a lot of risk of cataracts, for instance. But there is at least a small chance of that because you are having that bright light in your eyes. It's probably the best I can say is that, you know, nothing has zero potential risk, but when you look at the relative likelihood of that, I think it's pretty low.
Pretty low. Okay. Thanks, Linda. Terry in Zion, Illinois. Hi. Thanks for calling.
How you doing today?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Love your show, Larry. I listen to you every chance I get.
Thanks, Terry.
Question on the time change thing, twice a year. Is an hour that much difference? I mean, it seems to me that since it causes a lot of people problems adjusting to that time change, they would just... it would make common sense to me that you would just, like, either in the fall, this fall, just set it back a half hour and just leave at the same time or come to an agreement, and next spring you can just spring ahead a half hour and just leave the time since it gives so many people problems on that adjustment. And I'd like your opinion on that.
Well, I guess I can give my personal opinion. I think that change of an hour at a time can be kind of challenging, but I know there's a long historical perspective and probably it originated when people were doing different types of jobs more outdoors that it really fit their work schedules better. But I guess we'd have to take that up with our legislators who make those decisions.
How'd you like to live in Indiana? Isn't it true? I'm sure it's true that there are counties in Indiana where they don't have daylight savings and then other counties that do.
That's right. And even some states as a whole don't use it. So, like Arizona and Hawaii, I know, for example. But, you know, perhaps with their latitude, they don't have to worry about that as much either.
Yeah, that's true.
Strictly, clinically, I agree that it might be simpler if we could just avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think. Maybe you can take a poll and see what a lot of other people think. But yeah. Just my opinion.
All right.
Thank you.
And I'm sure other people will weigh in on that, Terry. Thanks for calling. Jill and Racine, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I've had chronic depression 20 years. And depression is self-limiting. That means, you know, it'll last a week or two. You know, your pet dies, a dear friend, a mother, anything can cause a depression, especially the winter. I have a sunlight, and that helps. But whatever you do, even last week I got a comment about seeing a psychiatrist. It's no shame. You know, find someone to support you, a friend, a doctor, if that's what you need, but a support will help you. Doctor, if you need one, and you just may need one, but it is self-limiting. And I mean, I got a comment recently, and it wasn't nice. And it's been 20 years.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad, Jill. I'm really sorry for you having that condition for so long, and also for the comment, but for the nasty comment. But Dr. Michael Peterson, you have comments.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing. I think it takes more people who are willing to say, yes, I have depression, or yes, I have these other psychiatric conditions, and bigger picture than just the seasonal part. It still has some stigma. People don't understand it. They get scared about it. They hold certain beliefs about it. But it's important to realize that these are real medical conditions that we really can treat and help. And I think the more we can talk about it like this, it can help people understand that it shouldn't be something to be ashamed of, and that we really can treat and help.
Yeah. Jill, thanks for calling and sharing that. Philip in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I was stationed 60 miles north of the Arctic Circle in Greenland in the mid-1950s. I was a meteorologist, and that meant that I had to work shifts, changing shifts. In 6 days, it would be 2 days on day shift, and then 2 days on midnight shift, and then 2 days on swing shift. Even in the mainland, that is rough on your circadian rhythms. But to have that north of the Arctic Circle is insane. And that's why I finished my career as a reservist, because I could not see myself working crazy shifts like that for a full career. I do not know whether the Air Force has modified that, but I'd like your comments thereon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow is
very
right.
I think that has to be extremely difficult. So like Larry had brought up earlier, the farther north somebody lives, the more chance there is that they may experience a seasonal change in their mood. And what you described is really about the far extreme of that. And so that really does put people at risk of that. And suicide rates are higher in Nordic countries and northern Canada, probably partly for that reason. Shift work alone, because of throwing off your internal clock and not getting good sleep, puts people at risk of a lot of physical problems, including depression. And you add that to that lack of light, and that's just a setup. I would hope, though, that if people had to work in those conditions, in those climates, that there was some opportunity to have light replacement, because that would be a really critical part of maintaining function.
Absolutely. You can join in, too, by the way, with your question or comment or experience. Love to hear it at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Kind of in response to our last caller, Mike emailed in and said, I don't understand why most people have trouble with this. I've worked rotating shift for about 40 years. I would work the day shift for 3 or 4 days, have a couple days off, then work 3 or 4 days of the night shift every week. I'm not saying that I never had any trouble, but most of the time I was just fine with changing shifts. So a change of 1 hour seems odd. I never had to use a light box.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and that speaks well to, there's a lot of variability between individuals with how we respond to different things. So just like some of us like hot weather and some like cold weather more, we're going to have more or less ability to adapt to time changes or shift work, too. If you line people up, though, more people out of 100 are going to have trouble working a night shift and shifting to a day shift every few days like that. Sounds like, fortunately, he's somebody who was able to adapt to that and not have too much of a bad effect.
Mm-hmm. Chris from Wisconsin Dells wants to not only remind people to take their vitamin D and have their vitamin D levels tested, but also to remind everybody that vitamin D was discovered here in Wisconsin by Professor Harry Steinbach. And Chris says we should be very proud of that. And we have the Steinbach Library on the College of Ag and Life Sciences campus at the UW-Madison.
That's right. Good to have that Wisconsin connection.
Yeah, absolutely. What happens, Elizabeth wanted to know from Baraboo, what happens to the body physiologically when someone suffers from SAD?
Sure. So some of these are going to be relatively subtle changes that usual medical or lab tests aren't going to pick up. But some of the things may be a little bit different. Metabolism, which like Larry brought up early on, people tend to crave carbohydrates more and may be gaining weight and sleeping more, so their metabolism slows down to some extent. physiologically, we don't have any good tests we can do to measure the amount of or degree of depression. So it's there's not a consistent way of pointing to that or measuring that, or even doing sensitive brain scans don't give reliable results for an individual person. So sorry for kind of a vague answer with that.
Linda in the Iron Belt, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is back to the iron, or to Iron Belt, to the light box.
Mm-hmm.
What size are the lights, and like wattage, and how do you know if you're getting the proper, you know, is it fluorescent? I just want to know about the bulbs.
Sure. I think some of the newer ones use fluorescent bulbs. They often are trying to do full spectrum lights, so not just your off-the-shelf fluorescent bulbs. Are trying to have the full spectrum of white light. And let's see, I believe that the usual, you're wanting to have about 10,000 lux of bright light is what you're aiming for. So trying to have bright enough lights that at that given distance, you're getting that amount of brightness that you're exposed to.
10,000 lux.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Do you, does counseling help?
Yeah, counseling is a good option for depression as well as seasonal affective disorder. That, you know, again, kind of like exercise and light therapy, it's an option, not medication, especially since not everybody's open to that or can tolerate it. The seasonal affective part, again, finding ways to get light are going to help that, but
yeah.
Certain types of counseling can address at least awareness of it, looking at other ways that that depression affects us and how to reverse that to improve the depression.
Steve in West Salem, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Steve Farkas here. I work for a professional lighting systems, and I had actually started with the old Durotest company, which was the originator of the full spectrum lighting.
Uh-huh.
And there's a variety of different lights that people have used over years for the seasonal affective disorder. But I wanted to note in particular, the earlier caller had mentioned using grow lights.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, that's not considered a great idea because there's an awful lot of high-end ultraviolet that comes out of a grow light. So whether you choose a true full-spectrum light or whether you do some of the more color-correct or some of the other lighting choices, grow lights are probably not the best choice.
Oh, that makes good sense. Steve, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that very much. So don't use grow lights. Rodney in Cottage Grove, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I thought I'd give you a buzz. This is what I do all the time. I work with light and its effects on human physiology, and we're actually a contractor that does this for energy efficiency. But what we do is we'll use high Kelvin lighting, 5,000 Kelvin in office spaces, and it helps immensely. It's about the amount of blue in the light. And it's, to get technical, it's between 460 and 480 nanometers. But you need that every day because we have to have the blue in our life. You have to remember, we evolved outside under the blue sky.
Yeah.
And you can get this type of light at any, I want to say, Home Depot, whatever, and it's called daylight light. But you don't want that light at night because it'll disrupt your circadian system.
Hmm.
You want to have a warmer color at night, and it helps put you to sleep. But if you get hit with this light that's rich in the blue spectrum for the first 30 minutes of the day, you can alleviate seasonal affective disorder in over 50% of the population.
Hmm. What do you think, Dr. Peterson?
Well, I appreciate these last couple of callers who really have some good technical expertise kind of beyond my realm as far as the lighting. It's correct, though, that there's better evidence for the blue light spectrum for treating seasonal affective disorder. Some studies don't separate it out that detailed. It is really important, though, to have that bright light exposure be during the daytime and to try to preserve your sleep at night the best. You want to avoid bright light and probably particularly in those wavelengths close to bedtime, which is why some people say that a lot of screen time right before bed is probably not the best thing if you have sleep problems either.
And just let me add to this also, Doctor, is there's a program that's free on the Internet, and it's called F.Lux, L-U-X. And you can download it onto your computer or your cell phone, and it automatically turns your screen background to a warmer yellowish color, say, after 7 o'clock at night.
Huh.
Because what's happening, all these kids are on cell phones until 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and it's got that blue background. Mm-hmm. And when you've got that blue light hitting your eyes, it's going to suppress melatonin. And by the time you turn it, when you turn it off, it's going to take you at least a half hour to fall asleep.
So this is called, what is it again? It's F?
F.Lux.
F.Lux. Huh.
Well, thanks. That'll be an interesting thing to look into.
I'm marking it down myself. F.Lux. L-U-X. Thanks again, Rod. Appreciate the call. And Mike in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I had a question for your guest to see if he's ever heard of sun gazing. I first became familiar with it. I read up on it a few years ago. Someone turned me on to it. And it's the act of staring wide-eyed into the sun directly during sunrise and sunset. And it's only for a first short while, the first 20, 30 minutes as the sun rises and the sun sets. And I've read a bunch into it, and I've even seen a documentary. There's a documentary about a gentleman who fasts for up to 30 days, living just on water and using sun gazing to metabolize the nutrients and the chemicals in his body just by having the light enter through the eyes. And I've, as an avid bow hunter here in Wisconsin, I spent a lot of time out watching the sunrise and watching the sunset as I'm out hunting. And over the past year or so, I kind of thought about it more and took this into a little bit of practice while I'm out in the mornings. And I've noticed it has made a little bit of difference in just general depression and activity, mental activity on my part. And I wonder if you've heard of anything about sun gazing at all. We've heard of, there's been a lot of talk about the various amounts of using light, but I wonder if...
Sun gazing, I would worry that it would have damaged my eyes.
I would agree. I can't say that's something I actually am familiar with, but it sounds like a kind of an interesting idea. I guess what I can say in the context of what we've been talking about is that adjusting your schedule so you can actually get some daylight is a good way to try to combat the seasonal depression. So that being outdoors, like you said, and getting that first daylight is probably really helpful at the very least in that way. And I guess I'd have to look into kind of the other research or claims that are being made about that particular practice. But I'm glad it's helping you, and I think getting that daylight. I think Larry makes a point, though, you got to be real careful about how much you're staring directly at the sun because of concerns about eye damage.
Yeah, absolutely. But thanks for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. And Arlene in St. Germain, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a question regarding the angle of the sun.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've covered that or not already. I think I do have a certain degree of sad. I notice that every winter. But I also notice that sometimes even as early as August that the late afternoon, that lower angle of the sun, really affects my mood. And I'm wondering, does the angle of the sun affect it as well as just the amount of sunlight you receive?
I'm not sure how well I could separate that out from the studies. I think it does make a difference, for instance, at our latitude. It's not only the amount of daylight that we have, but that that the angle that the sun is hitting us compared to at the equator. So there's probably less brightness of the light we're getting from the sun during those times. So it's not surprising that, you know, people who are really sensitive to some of these changes will notice that late summer, even they can feel a difference with the sunlight that they're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Arlene. Gail in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. The question I have is I had a cataract surgery last month, and the lenses that they put in have a UV filter and a blue filter. Now, is that going to affect with seasonal affective disorder?
Yeah, I don't know any specific data on that, but I would think that to have too much of a blue filter where you're going to actually kind of block the ability of the light to affect your mood would probably be noticeable in the colors that you're seeing, too, so they probably wouldn't use that strong of one. I guess I don't know for sure, and I'd have to look into that specifically. It might have to see if you actually need to be in the light a little bit more to maintain benefit of the light.
Oh, yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Gail. Pat in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. My father had suffered from SAD, and my brother read or heard on something that photo-gray eyeglass lenses could contribute to that. So he changed and got just regular glasses, and he didn't have a problem after that. But he didn't get enough sunlight because they turned dark as soon as he went out when he had that type of sunglass or regular glasses.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I guess any sort of sunglasses are going to reduce the amount of light getting through your pupil into your retina and then affecting the brain. So you're going to reduce the amount of light you can get and get that effect from it. So photogray, I guess you're keeping a little bit of shading on it all the time. So I guess that makes sense as far as light exposure.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And just one final comment. Marty from northern Wisconsin shot an email in and said this relates to sun gazing and said sun gazing is a terrible idea. Georgia O'Keefe did it, and she went blind. So I think looking at the sun directly for any long period of time, you're risking a lot. So that would be my comment. Anyway,
yeah,
my thought.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Well, we've covered an awful lot. Just in conclusion, though, what are the warning signs that we may need more serious interventions here?
Sure. So the most important thing is if you're ever having thoughts that it's not worth living or thoughts about suicide, that's a big red flag that you need help. If you're getting low and just can't get the energy or motivation to do things that you usually need to do, be it getting to work, taking care of yourself or your family, that's a sign that it's getting enough that you really need more intervention, and that's probably the most. If you find you just can't enjoy things, and that's going on for more than a week or two at a time, the longer it goes on, the more severe it is. Those are the big red flags.
Well, I tell you what, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Sure.
Really appreciate it, and I hope we can do this again.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Michael Peterson, Assistant Professor and Director of Hospice Psychiatric Services and Psychiatric Clerkship Director at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest. If you're like me, when the temperature drops and the days get shorter, it's a lot more tempting to mindlessly munch. And, of course, there are always fresh veggies that are good for us, but they don't always have the same satisfaction as a crispy, crunchy snack of another sort. Judy Knudsen is a UW Extension Family Living educator for Brown County, and she's going to be with us next to talk about that very thing, healthy snacking, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.